Welcome to Musically and Technically Speaking, a podcast where music and technology intersect, hosted by Brenda Minch and Carol Broves. Today's topic is Cute is Not a Music Class.
Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Carol. So I get this interesting comment around Christmas time when we do our concerts. The classroom teachers come up to me and they mean well, and they say things like, when I'm all stressed out, they say things like, "Don't worry about it, Brenda. As long as they're cute, it'll be fine."
Oh, I know. It's like all we have to do is just put them up there and don't even have them sing or perform, and they're just, if they're cute, that's okay.
Right. And I guess I get frustrated by that in part because I spend a lot of time trying to get my kids to do quality music stuff, whether it's singing or playing or whatever. And I guess I don't want to say it's nice, but it's good to know that I will never lose my job because my kids weren't cute enough.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, I always tell especially my third graders who are old enough to understand, that if somebody comes to you and says, "You guys were just so cute. It was a great show." Or, and here's my next biggest pet peeve, "When you guys made that mistake, it was just so funny."
Oh, I know. Oh.
Because you can put elementary kids on the stage, and if they goof up, the parents just think it's cute and it's funny. And, you know, people think that's a compliment, that they were funny when they made their mistake. But if you did that with the high school group and they made a mistake, you would not tell them that it was so funny.
Right.
And if you it would be, it would not be a compliment.
And one of the things that I really stress is behavior, because that is my, and I think the idea of cute, I try to pull that right out, because I try to stress with my kids is behavior. It's the first thing people see. It's the last thing people see is your behavior and how your presence is on stage. And I had a couple years ago, I had two students, and they thought this was so cute. Was I had two students standing next to each other, and they proceeded to, we had a little stomp. It was a little stomp. You sort of put, "We won't get some figgy pudding," and the kid inadvertently stomped on a kid's foot. Well, then the other kid thought that's what they should be doing, and they ended up stomping on each other's feet for the remainder of the song.
Which
I mean,
is cooler,
I was,
because you were so
I was,
on that.
Oh, I was furious. And I really got down on the kids. And, you know, of course people afterwards said, "Oh, that was so cute that happened." And I said, "Well, we have behavioral issues." That's what I said. Mm-hmm. And it stopped the parent and stopped the whole thing. And the next day we talked about it, and I told the students, I have it all on video, and I showed them the video, and they were horrified. You know, I said, and you don't know how many other people have the video of this, you know?
Right.
So I totally agree. We work so hard on everything that, you know, cute is not a music class. I think that's what you talked about.
Right. And, you know, I think that it becomes a problem because so much of what we do is PR. And what the parents don't understand is, you know, that you're learning actual music stuff. You're not just learning how to sing a song for that program.
Right.
That is not the curriculum. The curriculum is not, "For Christmas we will sing, you know, we wish you a Merry Christmas." That's not a curriculum. That is a method of teaching the curriculum, a means of getting the information to the child, how to use a good singing voice, how to sing in rhythm, how to sing with a group. Those are the things we're teaching.
Right.
The vehicle is the piece.
Yeah, and I it's funny because I've talked to people too where they think art and music is the same, and I try to explain to them that they're the complete opposite, and they look at me in this wonderment. I said, "Music is making sure everyone's doing something together at the same time. Art is all how well you work as an individual in an individual project, because that's how the classes are set up." And I'm, like I said, I'm more into behavior. How do we look as a group?
Right.
What is the group effect? I don't want to see one person over in the corner turning around, staring up at the lights. I don't want one kid where the lights are so bright that they're putting their hands over their eyes. You know, I don't want the stomping of the foot. I don't want
the waving to mom and dad.
Right, the waving to mom and dad.
That's what I'm dealing with. We fixed that this when we went to the stage. We turned the footlights on. So now they can't see anything. All they can see is the footlights. But it's that kind of thing that I talked to the kids because we just got done with our 50 Nifty program, and we had the big conversation of if your parents come to you and say the best thing that they can think to say about the program was that it was cute, we didn't do our jobs.
It goes right along with commenting. You know, I think there's two, you talked about it, you didn't do your job if the parents say, you know, cute is the only thing. And this goes along with one, even the national standards. How did you listen? What did you see? And, you know that I've been working really hard on commenting, and it's one of my biggest concerns that I have. I think this goes right in hand. Oh, it was so cute. Oh, you did a great job, but they didn't tell you what you did. They didn't say, oh, I liked it when you guys all got up there and you all at the same time started together. I mean, specific musical traits. And I think that's how we sort of have to attack it. And I love what you just said.
Okay, but then maybe we need, go ahead.
Yeah, I love what you just said. If someone says you were so cute, then we didn't do our job.
Right. And see, I think that part of our job, because what we're doing in the classroom, when we're learning a dance or a song, like, okay, for instance, if we're learning a dance, I make sure to point out to the kids what makes this a good dance, how we know from horrible to okay to great. Horrible means that nobody was together and it looks like a big pile of monkeys. You know, medium is okay. We made it through the piece. You know, the dance looked like a dance. It had a beginning, a middle, and an end. We all ended and started at the same time. Great is everybody's hand touched their partner's hand at exactly the same second. Everybody turned together at exactly the same second. And I think that just like it's our job as educators to educate the students, part of our job as a teacher who's like emceeing the program is to point out a few of those things to the parents during the performance, but before the performance begins for each grade level, to say some of the things we've been working on are making sure that our do-si-dos are tummy to tummy and back to back. And please look for that while we're performing. That way the parents then have something to go home and give the kid a specific compliment on, because otherwise I'm not sure that, I mean, just like our students, that they would know what to look for other than that it just looked okay.
You know, and I, now that you were talking about this, I think program notes, you know, we do program notes for the upper grades. I mean, I don't, but I mean, in high school, I mean, I think it's important that we let people know that this is the things that we're working on. I think we just assume, I mean, I've really worked on concert behavior for always. That's a whole nother program. But, you know, where I don't let kids start until the audience is quiet, and we wait. I mean, we wait until everything is working.
Sometimes you wait until it's painful.
It is.
You're waiting and you're still waiting, but we're not going to start until, because as soon as you start once with not being completely quiet, you're sunk.
And then once my announcer can't get them quiet, then I stand up and I say, you know, I will say something.
Right.
You know, they know that if I have to say something, the kids all know that's okay. Parents weren't being real good. Because I'll tell them, I'll say, I'm not going to talk unless your parents and the audience are not listening and are not being a good audience. So the parents and the kids know, okay, well, Mrs. Prost had to talk. That meant the audience wasn't doing a good job.
Right.
Because part of what you said, part of it is educating also not just our students and doing a good job, but also our audience.
Right.
You know, for some people, this may be the only live performance they see all year.
So how do you handle educating the audience on proper concert etiquette then?
What I do is I actually will say to the students, once things get bad, you know, I'll say, okay, you know, you need to be quiet. We're not going to start till everyone's quiet, and please stay in your seats. And it's interesting. I now have kids that, you know, talk, and kids have come up with the idea of please keep your preschoolers in the chairs, and they want that. They want the cell phones off, and they're the ones that have actually have the little, they write up the little thing to announce, but I have eighth graders. You're K-3, so.
Right.
But I have eighth graders, and they actually, they'll say that, you know, please don't use your cell phones. Please be, you know, understanding that there's a lot of movement. Please don't get out of your chairs. You know, this is not going to be that long of a show, and la-di-da-di-da.
So you're having your kids make announcements prior to the concert beginning.
Yes.
Okay. And yes. Those are student-driven announcements. They're the ones
yes.
deciding what needs to be announced.
Right. Okay. Right, but I give them, of course, a little. And now, you see, it's just like in anything. Because I've been doing it for a couple of years, the kids are already in mode. It's been modeled a couple of years.
Right.
And so every kid wants to announce, and kids, they know it's sort of first come, first serve. And so kids will come up to me sometime in October, November. Mrs. Brooks, can I announce the holiday concert? And so, well, the thing is, you know, they first of all, they get out of class a little bit more. And usually it's a kid that's sort of cued in anyway. You know, I've never had a kid that, you know, it's usually a kid that's a theater kid that likes to talk and feels very comfortable on stage. And, you know, they get to sit backstage for the assembly and for the concert. And, you know, that's pretty cool, you know.
Yeah.
So.
See, with my elementary kids, I have weaseled into that two ways. One, about a month before the concert, every other music class, because I see them twice a week, so once a week, we're discussing what concert behavior looks like.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what it looks like for them on week one. On week two, I tell them it's their job to go home and educate their parents on what proper concert behavior looks like. So then they're supposed to go home, and I don't know if they really do or not. It doesn't really matter to me. They go home, and they're supposed to tell Mom and Dad, hey, Mom and Dad, when you go to the concert, we'd really like it if you sit quietly because Mrs. Minch wants us to sit quietly, and we need quiet to think to our best ability. Then on week number three, so we're 2 weeks out from the concert now, I send home a note to the parents with, you know, the typical reminder, hey, the concert's in 2 weeks. Don't forget to get your kids together and all that business and get grandma and grandpa there and all that stuff. But also, don't forget to go to the bathroom before you leave the house. Don't forget to let your kid give him his coat before he comes up to sing with us.
Right.
You know, all that reminder stuff goes home in a note. And I don't know that it's made, like, you know, all the difference in the world, but it's at least a starting point. So that they're starting to hear some of that stuff. And the longer I put that note out and talk to the kids, the better the concert behavior is getting. And like I said a couple shows ago, turning the lights out during the performance helped immensely. For some reason, dark means quiet. And so, okay, I'll take that.
Right. And I'm trying to improve that. I mean, we're always into improve mode. And I finally got my kids to understand they don't get a drink during the show. This idea that they have to have a drink every 5 seconds. And all that does is create a little disturbance. The drinking fountain, my drinking fountain, is like 10 feet from the front of the – it's not in the back of the gym. It's in the front.
So
it creates a little bit of a disturbance. So, you know, I've stopped that. So, you know, like I said, it's going to be an ongoing – and K-3, I mean, I taught K-8, so I used to do K-3. K-3 has more behavioral issues than 4-8 just because there's younger children there. I mean, I've had 3-year-olds – three-year-olds, you know, all of a sudden bolt up to the stage in the middle of a show, you know, and the mother's like running after. And of course, I remind that child in fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth grade when they did that, you know. Got to remember that name. Seriously.
Yes, yes. Okay, now let's look back on track. We were talking about cute is not a music class.
Right.
So I think that sometimes, I don't know, I've been struggling with this a little bit. Cute is not a music class can sometimes eke its way into your curriculum because it's really easy because the parents like it to do, you know, a musical for every season because we do a big holiday show, right? And the parents, they eat that up because they love when their kids get up there and sing. But I have found myself that if I do a big show every quarter, that's all I do. Like, I don't get a chance to talk about anything else because it takes a lot of time to put together, you know, lines and songs and everyone standing on the stage. So I think you have to find a way to balance the stuff that you're doing for learning in your own classroom and also the PR kind of, you know, fuzzy stuff that you do for a big concert. I don't know.
Right.
What's your feeling on that?
Yes. Well, that's why my whole focus is performance and technology. I mean, you know, we will be like 6 weeks just working on a show and not even touching a computer. And then all of a sudden we're back in computer time and working on composer projects or working on our garage band or whatever we're doing. And we're not really even singing unless the kids are singing, you know, to the computer and stuff.
Right.
So, you know, once we have the show, it's over. We're moving on to something else. You know, I try to balance it where I do computer, then we sing and do a show, and then we do computer and sing. I try to go back and forth. Because as the kids get older, there's some kids that are just way into all the technology, and they really don't want to perform that. They've done performing since they were in preschool. They, you know what? They've done it, been there, done that. And right. I have other kids that, oh, my gosh, you put a microphone out, and they are just happy campers, and it's all they want to do is sing.
Right.
You know, so you got to offer both. I mean, I see that both have to have both. If you, it was funny. I was in my graduate class today, and the kids were relaying the story how almost every single one of them, these are now 18, 19, 20 year olds, when they were in dental music class up until sixth grade, the only thing they did in class is
sing.
Bingo. Sing. And, yeah. You know, and.
Now, wait, that's a little, thing, these are people who are currently in your grad classes,
yes.
So 18, 19, 20 years. That is interesting to me because I know that when I was in college, that whole movement of trying to get more of, like, you know, not just a bag of songs, they were trying to expand that. So I'm surprised. I mean, I've been teaching 13 years, and those would have been some of the kids that would have been going through the program, and yet we're still not seeing a change.
Yeah. And the other thing was they said there were still the kids that have been singing for 7 years. Still couldn't hold a pitch.
Well,
so,
yeah.
You know, just because they, and I, you know that too. So that was interesting as it, you know, put those two together. So, which is interesting too, because I've been teaching for almost 31 years and I've never done 100% singing. I've always done, you know, instruments and dancing and
right.
You know, recorders and, you know, different, you know, before technology came in.
Well, I think
because
you
I realized
to, because otherwise you end up, those kids who can't hold a pitch get very frustrated and they think that no music at all is for them.
Right. And then they come into the classroom and they're already upset. You know, you're not going to get them to do anything different because now you've been singing for so long. So.
Right.
Well this has been a good
part of music too. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Very. Yeah, I agree. So, well, this has been good. Like I said, I do like this Cute is Not a Music class. That's great. This is Brenda's idea.
That's right. I just encourage every music director out there to go beyond just the face value of what is cute and think, you know, about what musical concepts you're teaching inside of your cuteness. Cuteness is fine. Just make sure there's like a reason for the cute. Don't just do cute for cute's sake. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you would like more information on any of the topics we discussed, all the links are on the blog.